9 o'clock. It's the first Friday of the month, and that means Baker Orchard at Centuria presents Sandra the Plant Lady and the Plant Rant.
Good morning.
Go ahead and rant.
I always do. Good morning, Bob, and good morning, Debbie.
Hi, good morning.
Debbie Elmer is back with us again, and I'm so excited. We also will be having Clint with Cultivating the Commons joining us as well. He will be in shortly, and so we'll just get started. So with Clint, Cultivating the Commons, you can go back through the archives at WPCARadio.org, click on menu, click on Plant Rant, and scroll through. And Clint was on before. He has a seed farm, which is just so intriguing. And as you all know, I've talked many times, so I don't normally do a lot of seed growing. And when he was on before, it was just so intriguing. So this is the time of year when people start planting and dreaming and wishing and getting anxious. And we just had Imbolc, which is the holiday that we celebrate that is halfway between the winter solstice and the equinox. So we're over the hump. Days are getting longer. And so I thought it'd be a good time of the year to talk about seeds. So what do you like to do with seeds, Debbie?
Well, I've been experimenting more, and I'm excited to talk to Clint. I just met him this winter. He was at the farmers market in St. Croix and part of the St. Croix Valley Food Alliance. A lot of the farmers in the area are coming together to increase their strength and ability to market and sell locally and to the cities. And so I encountered him in his seed packets, and I thought, seed farm, that sounds like an oxymoron. Don't you put seeds? What's happening?
Right. Blows my mind. Like, oh, I never thought of where the seeds come from.
Yeah. Right? And that we'd actually have a resource right here in Amory is, I think, really special. I know there's also one for the waterfall district as well for the, let's see, it's not the DNR. It's the group that plants all the seeds in the wetlands for the state. There's a Star Prairie seed farm as well. And to know that we have two, an independent one and then a state-run seed farm locally, it's really interesting.
I feel like you and I talked about that Star Prairie one in our summer interview or spring talk.
Yeah, I got really excited about that because the number of kiddie pools involved.
Oh, yes, yeah. The kiddie pools. So you can look at that archive too from Debbie and my talk, not the one in what month is it today? So not the month and not the December one. It is February. Yeah. But the one we did in, I don't know if it was May or June, but you can look back and find that because we did talk about that quite a bit. But yeah, aren't we lucky?
Oh, we are lucky. But I've been experimenting with it in my kitchen now. I'm not bringing a kiddie pool into my kitchen.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
But how can you seed save at home? And what does that even mean? And are some seeds different from others? And I was talking to Dragonfly Gardens about how they're getting ready for spring here in Amory. And they have started what's called stratifying their seeds. Stratification, which is a big word that I was scared of. And I started to learn a little more about it. And so I was hoping to talk to you about it. And Clint, when he gets here, how do you know when a seed, what is stratification? How do you know when a seed needs to be stratified? And can you just have fun with this? And you and I were just talking about what we're doing in our kitchen.
Yes. Well, and so stratification, do you want to explain
a little
bit? Yeah,
let's talk about it. No,
yeah.
I want you to explain about it.
Oh, boy, I'm not a seed person, though. I'm going to cheat. So we need to wait for Clint maybe for that and see.
Well, I do know with my work with native plants and shorelines in the region that a lot of our native plants need this winter season, just like we need a winter season to rest and get ready. Some of our seeds really need to go through this cold season to be able to sprout in the spring. And there's some seeds that don't. So if you're seed saving from flowers in your yard or that you find that are dried on the plant and you bring those in, you do want to make sure they don't have moisture in them because they'll get moldy. But it's pretty easy. You save them and plant them in the spring. But a few of those seeds are going to need to go through some kind of cold treatment, whether that's leaving it outside or cycling it in your refrigerator or freezer. There's a couple ways to do it. And I haven't had a lot of success stratifying because I haven't tried it because it's been intimidating. But I'm baby stepping into it by saving my avocado seed.
Well, and it's interesting. Okay, so you feel that the that the avocado needs to be stratified?
No, I don't. I think that stratification sounds a little intimidating. Like, okay. How long do I keep it in my fridge?
So what, and I guess working with the natural cycle, so, and this is another archive interview that can be looked up again, is The Butterflies by Janie.
Okay.
And because she raises the monarchs, she needs the milkweed. And that is one plant that needs that stratification. So she, I mean, you can just leave them out or spread them around, which is what I just kind of spread the pods wherever. But when you want to control where they are, so she would just put them all like into a shoebox and then leave them like in the garage. So they were gathered in one spot, but then stored in a way where they would go through the natural cycle. So you can review her interview.
I love that putting something in a shoebox is just part of a, and putting it in the garage is part of a process. Yeah. This is part of the intimidating process. It doesn't have to be that intimidating.
Well, and so you brought up the avocado seed, which I actually have one here. And my favorite word when it comes to seeds is scarification, when you have to scarify something. So you know how you do that? You look at it and go, boo! Okay, I'm just kidding. It's not how you scarify a seed. But the avocado is a really, really hard seed. People who've grown, like morning glories, have probably had a scarify.
Okay.
And it's where you either make a nick in the seed or you soak it to soften up that hard seed coat. So my son started growing avocados when he was around 4. And people were like, wow, you grew this great avocado tree. And he's like, yeah, well, his secret, and he still likes to do this, is he takes the avocado pit and he slams it down on the floor or on the ground somewhere, which I guess would be a method of scarification because it's kind of trying to break that.
I suppose.
And then some people soak them. I have one friend who was telling me, like, he does, like, the toothpick thing where you stick the toothpick through and put it in the water and get it. And I'm like, ah, you don't need to do all that.
What
just
do you do? Do you
stick
have a
it
tool?
In the dirt? I don't do anything. Oh. This one I soaked in the water. Sometimes they'll come out of the avocado and you can see they're already kind of starting to root.
Oh, cool.
Probably from that moisture in there. But I just stick them in the dirt. I probably have 5 avocados growing right now. The oldest one that Anthony did when he was 4, which would have been 9 years ago now.
Wow.
That one did die one summer. I had it outside and but it had gotten like 6 feet tall.
What?
And
just from a grocery store avocado, you took the pit out.
Yeah.
Avocado.
Yep.
You can do this today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another super fun seed, which I did bring visual. I brought props today. But the Ohio Buckeye is a super fun. So it's called the Buckeye because it looks kind of like a deer eye. But it has this awesome little hatch, a trap door. This is a really fun one to do with kids. So you can take the Buckeye seeds and you hit them with the hammer.
And then that trap
and the
door
little
opens?
Hatch opens.
Yeah. I had not seen that before.
And Buckeyes are kind of fun. Like, you know, they're actually like around this is going to be like a spiky, spiny, kind of cool cluster. Oh, and Buckeyes have really beautiful flowers.
Okay.
Too. Like they have really pretty flowers. But these are just fun seeds. I learned about these in college. And that little trap door, I just think is great.
That is cool. How hard do you have to hit it with a hammer?
Well, do you want to take this one home with you and
I do.
Try it?
I'll report back on how hard I had to hit it with a hammer.
But aren't they fun? And these have been sitting around for a while. I'm not sure how viable, but that's the fun part about seeds. Like, you know, you get these, sometimes you can score some free seed packets from places because they're expired. Well, seeds can last for hundreds of years. So seeds can last hundreds of years. That's the best part about them. So these are probably still viable. We'll find out.
I
should plant them for us.
A lemon on our countertop right now where we're taking the seeds. We're planting those too. I have the sons are 8 and 10 and they enjoy taking seeds from different plants we have.
Isn't that so fun?
Fruits.
I just love how seeds are so different. Like I have all my seeds in one drawer. I'm not very organized, but there's some that are fuzzy and some that are round and some are still in the pod and they work like a rattle. And good morning, Clint is here. Ooh, hello from Cultivating the Commons. We're good.
Yeah.
Your day is about to you can drop in for a minute. You made
yeah,
it.
Yeah, totally.
And this cold weather can be challenging sometimes for getting out
challenges
and about.
Here and
but
there
you're
sure.
here.
Made it. No
so Clint is back. As I mentioned, you can listen to our previous interview at the archives. And this is Debbie Elmer. You've met this winter, Debbie. She was saying.
We met at the farmer's market.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
And we're just impressed that we have this local seed farm right here cultivating the commons.
So. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming up. I just, today's a lot of seed packing, so I'm excited to finish this up. And I have a couple of friends stopping by to just start putting stuff in packets that we'll have at the Dragonfly and maybe another, the co-op up in Luck.
Okay, so you'll have them out for sale, not where you're physically present, but there will be seed racks of Cultivating the Commons at the Luck, the Alternative Food Co-op and Dragonfly Nursery here in Amory. Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah.
But I have friends that have ordered from you, I know. And I suppose this is probably your busiest time of the year because this is when everyone wants to get their stuff started, right?
Yeah, just a different busy, right? I think less seed shuffling and now just seed cleaning and fine-tuning and testing and all that kind of sit in a chair stuff. Instead of running around outside with my head cut off, I run around inside with my head cut off. So it's
and then you'll be, I imagine, starting, because you grow your plants to harvest the seeds, and you are starting your plants from seeds?
Yes. Well, actually, yes. So I usually try to wait till April. I was just talking about this with a mentee I have, and I usually wait till April to turn on things to get them heated up. And but usually, maybe in March, I'll start peppers and things. But otherwise, right now, I'm kind of just trying to relax. There's a big conference coming up. There's the Organic Seed Conference in Corvallis. That hasn't happened in about 6 or 8 years. So I'm excited about that and focusing on networking and meeting people at that and discussing the state of organic seed.
Where is that at? Where's that
Corvallis. At? It's the Willamette Valley. Kind of a cradle of seed production here in the U.S. in the Pacific Northwest.
I was going to say Willamette is a cultivar of hops, too. So that's a Pacific Northwest variety then probably.
Yeah.
I'll have to ask Eric about that.
They have all that coastal Mediterranean climate. So there's a lot of different farms out there producing seed with their dry summers and dry falls that they usually have.
Right, because moisture can be a challenge with, which is like my crazy jar here of a mix with the lid on. Could be risky, but I think everything looks okay in there.
Absolutely.
Or I could take it off, but then the mice might get in there and eat them, and I don't want the mice to eat them. They don't need any
this
more
This is your wild garden mix?
Yeah, my wild garden mix. I love it. That's
excellent,
what I should call it.
Excellent.
Yeah, there's coriander. Flowers. There's marigolds. There's something from my amaryllis from inside.
Oh, beautiful.
So, you know, I haven't done a lot with seeds, but you've inspired me, Clint, to play more with them and have fun with them. So.
Oh, absolutely. That's a little thing I'm encouraging right now. All my orders, I send out a little packet, a little mini packet of this broccoli Grex we're having that we made last year. What a Grex is basically a very diverse population of a particular type of plant. So I gathered maybe 20 different varieties, had them breed together, and then they're going to make this very diverse population that people can take home and play with. So I'm just kind of sharing that seed. It was part of a grant from the Going to Seed Foundation.
And,
and so that's been exciting to share that with folks. That's another fun mix to play with, similar to this mix a little bit.
And that's only broccoli?
Just sprouting broccoli. Yep.
And all those broccoli plants in that seed mix, will they be different then?
Oh, gosh, I hope so.
Okay,
and will people report back to them?
Oh,
like,
I
are you going to be able to get information? And I love that you're giving them a bonus. Good for you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is fun. We'll see what people's reactions are. Usually people like it. There'll be white ones, purple ones, stemmy ones, multi-heading ones, maybe, you know, miniature head ones. And then they should just keep producing all summer is the goal.
Oh, cool.
And we'll do that for 3 years. I'm going to do that. That's a part of that grant is a 3-year production. So we just keep crisscrossing and putting layers upon layers of crosses on top of this population so that there's a really diverse. We're almost discouraging heirloom in a sense.
But at the same time, though, like you're promoting diversity.
Yeah,
I mean, we have so much monoculture. It's like, okay, everyone, the emerald ash borer wouldn't be such a problem if you didn't plant every tree in the boulevard the exact same species, like
totally,
or genuses. But I mean, diversity is our key to success in the plant world, because if something comes along that takes out one thing,
absolutely. Yeah, the broccoli in particular I thought was nascent in this area because it is a very Mediterranean crop. We have a lot of issues in the upper Midwest with heat, humidity, this and that. For big juicy broccoli heads, a lot of people have given up commercially, the production often is like a 50-50 toss-up. So a lot of people are thinking about sprouting as more of like harvesting the stems and sprouting types and instead of focusing on these head types. So
for sprouts themselves?
Yeah. You take away this head, but then it just keeps doing side shoots, and that's the goal of this project is a side-shooting diverse population of broccoli.
And so when you gave those seeds with your seed orders, were you giving people a little information card or...
Oh, it just has a little note
so they know what's going on, like what to expect.
These people that find me, I'm always surprised that they found me. And I'm like, oh, you're curious enough to find me, so you're curious enough to probably read the, I have a little excerpt on the website and stuff. People can read about its origins and what to expect.
I'll have to ask my friend Nikki and Betsy if they got one of your little broccoli pads. And remind them to listen to the show. I don't know if they're listening right now or not. But
sure, sure.
Archives, people. Really promoting the archives today.
What else is kicking?
Let's touch base on that waiting till April. I feel like people get way too excited this early, I understand it. But at the same time, like, our late season you're going to have some leggy, lanky plants.
Every time I planted tomatoes before, June 1st or before May 20th, always got to cover them. I always have to cover them because there's a late frost. Every time I've tried to beat the thing, a late frost swings in. Or I remember that May, 25th snow that covered everything and melted right away. But it was enough to damage plants. And I'm just like, okay, I'm over it. And then I'm not a market farmer. I'm just a veggie seed farmer. So it's, my goals are not first at market, first of this, first of that. It's like, I can take my time.
As long as
I get a good amount of time to grow the seed crop out, that's all I meant.
And the peppers, you start earlier just because they have a longer season?
And they just take forever to germinate. You know, they take 3 weeks to get true leaves, it seems like. Nice true leaves to pot up. So I usually do those inside, and then I'll pop out in the greenhouse in April and pot them up.
And your other things, you led me right into my next question, which was, are you direct sowing? Are you sowing in a greenhouse? Are you sowing in, what's your, or does that vary?
We have, so a lot of our production is around contracts we produce for other companies, and our specialty has been lately tomatoes, peppers, and some other stuff, which we have tools for.
That is exciting. So, you showed me pictures last year of when you were getting the seeds out of things, which is so interesting.
A little grinder sifter machine that grinds up the tomatoes. There's no salsa that comes out the other end, just seed and detritus for our raspberry patch, but... they're big contracts and they're really fun, very exciting to have those on board. But that's mostly what I do in the greenhouse. And then I have some starts we make, for the broccoli trellises and other things we grow on the farm. And then we do direct seed just a handful of things still, like carrots and beets and some other root crops that just, got to do it.
Okay.
But otherwise, I like the making little plants and then putting them out there right after I till. And they usually have a nice jump start on all the bugs and weeds and what have you.
Right, give them the little upper hand.
Yeah.
So are peppers the first ones you start inside?
Yeah, usually. And herbs, if we do herbs.
Do you have a guideline for dates for people in this region to start their peppers?
Let me think for a second. Usually 10 weeks before last frost, I would say to aim for hot peppers especially. Sweet peppers don't take nearly as much time, maybe 8 weeks.
And a couple weeks after that for tomatoes or?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, tomatoes move really fast. Maybe 6 to 8 weeks before last frost. They can move very quickly.
Yeah, otherwise they're going to be too leggy. At least with a tomato, you can plant it deep and it'll side root.
Yeah, you can keep potting it up into bigger pots if you're into that.
Yeah, right. If you have the time for that, right?
Yeah, time and space is usually my issue, and I just focus on the smaller side instead of 3-inch pots. I just do little guys. But and it works for me. It gets the crops I need out of this throughout the season. So
it's interesting you mentioned that you're not growing it for the crops, so you don't need to get stuff to market. But I have to say the best garlic ever. It's so good and I still have lots of it even though I eat it all the time. And your potatoes just melt. So if you get seeds from Clint, these are what you're gonna be getting in the garlic. You sell it for people to grow. And then the potatoes, you'd put them in the oven, bake them, and they would just melt. It came out of there almost you open it up and it's already a mash.
Potatoes are supposed to taste like that.
These little red potatoes,
yes.
Right? So these are special. Has anyone ever heard of TPS or true potato seed?
No.
So the potato plant traditionally is an Andean tuber, and there's hundreds and maybe thousands of varieties that they had cultivated in these different altitudes. When it came through the bottlenecks of colonialism, it kind of got, estranged from its reproduction, and a lot of our plants don't even make. We just reproduce them clonally from chunks.
From the eye.
Yep. And so a lot of varieties don't even make seed, but I met a person... Bill Whitman out of Culta Variable. If you look it up online, Culta Variable. He runs a company that basically focuses on reestablishing and breeding potato seed. So literally getting plants to coaxing them back into reproduction, cleaning them of viruses, and then he offers true seed that you can plant, like a tomato seed, and then it makes a potato plant that's uniquely genetically individual, and then you can put that in your garden, and then collect tubers and keep upping them from the tubers if you want to.
Right, so if you find a variety that you really like, then you start cloning it versus propagating.
So I had a variety, I think it was called Lewitt, and then that had crossbred with probably several different types of red ones, but it had a main theme. So we planted that seed out, and 100 plants, you know, and it went through a series of hoops the first season of making the tubers from little plants. Half of them died from bugs. They got drowned in weeds. I mowed it all to the ground, and then some grew back, and I just picked all the winners that grew back and were able to squeak out tubers that year. And then those reproduced the following year astronomically, I think. It was crazy how many. I actually took care of them that year.
They were great.
And they did much.
They were like, they let us live.
They did much better, and it was very interesting. So, yeah, I think the process, people have always looked at potato seed as interesting because they're easier to ship. Seeds are easier to ship than a giant tuber, you know, to different locations or
and
places.
And it's dry, so you don't have the moisture issues and rotting. And
so people have played with the idea of like, wow, can we grow potatoes from seed? It's still a somewhat difficult process because they're so genetically more complex than even us. They're very diverse in the way their genes recombine. So it's hard to get true to type seeds, you know, but it's fun to play with. And so I had a good time with this experiment. I would love to offer tubers and or a seed from them maybe next year.
Oh, they were so good.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
So delicious.
Great. I'm glad you enjoyed them.
I was online looking at your website.
Sure.
And you mentioned just a little bit ago your seed contracts. Mm-hmm. And with those contracts, you're then selling to other seed sellers.
Yeah.
And some of those names, they're not just nationally known. They're worldwide.
Like, yeah.
And exciting. It's really impressive that right here in our little town of Amory, we have this seed farm that is worldwide. We're doing big things agriculturally in the region, and it's a lot to be proud of. And I'm just so excited to have you here. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about just being part of the St. Croix Food Alliance and the other farmers here and what that means for our community.
Absolutely. I was very attracted. I was initially invited to this community almost 10 years ago, but through a series of events, wasn't able to move up here. But I mean, it was very interesting. The effect of a number of farmers in the area was really attractive to me. Small farmers, intentional, very centered on organic production and things like that, which is, after I did my apprenticeship in seed, I was realizing like, wow, it would be really great. They had an effect on me about community seed when I studied there, and I wanted to bring that back and try to find other farmers to work with. Doing seed alone is pretty difficult. There's so much out there to work with, and it'd be great to use everyone else's skills as farmers to improve our community's asset, which would be the seed. And that's the whole idea of cultivating the commons. And so moving to this area with those farmers and those people with strong intentions and great skills was very attractive. And so I did luck out after moving a few times. We did an opening came where we were able to move to the area. And, yeah, been slowly building those relationships. The St. Croix River Food Alliance is fantastic. The connections are great. I've made lots of great associations and shared seed processes with a number of people and look forward to more of that. And they're all very encouraging and...
Well, that's fantastic to hear. We have such a legacy here in the region for agriculture and for that to continue, and maybe not in dairy farming, but in different ways and these unique, small, independent businesses that we have. And as they come together and more of them grow, rising tide lifts all boats. And
absolutely.
That's certainly what's happening with you, and it's exciting to share in your success.
Yeah, it's great. I'm glad for you here to participate, and I look forward to those. Those are the most meaningful relationships where someone grows something. I think as farmers, you're really locked in. It's really hard to sometimes get into that world because they're so locked in on all the logistics and numbers, and seed often falls very low to the priority list. I'll talk to a farmer. I tried to save seed once, but, you know, it just got too chaotic, and it's really easy to go to Johnny Seeds, make the order, print off the receipt, and then you're good with a certifier. You know, it's really, it takes a little more work to explore other options in small companies.
What are the benefits of using a seed that's locally grown?
The one I'm thinking about in my mind is just like having control and seed sovereignty over your seed, and like a love that, wow, I love vegetables, but now I really love this thing I produce, and you make this full connection. I like connecting that for folks when they see their plants and like, oh, this came from my work and that tactile thing. I think there's a lot of adaptability that can be done within certain varieties and things. Farmers have very different needs from gardeners, though, and I've easily recognized that when I started farming large scale. I was kind of working as a farmhand and realized, wow, uniformity is absolutely insanely crucial for these people. I need 900 heads of broccoli now. You know, not like 500 this week or a few hundred next week. They have very particular needs. And so it is important for me to recognize what their needs are and try to pick what vegetables that makes the most sense to focus on. But I think there's a lot of good openings and things to work on in the future.
I hadn't really thought about that. My friend Donna last year showed me a picture on her phone of a weird carrot, and I said, oh, I have a picture of a weird carrot too. And that's not what you're looking for in the commercial farms.
Not always.
You are among friends.
Yes. A lot of my products are tailored towards more gardeners exploring stuff or needing diversity. Like, some people do not want 900 heads of ones. They want 900 heads over the whole entire summer. And so, like, a more diverse population is very useful to gardeners to be able to go out and harvest things as they come. And just explore the curiosity and diversity that is in these plant worlds. It isn't all just about orange carrots. Oh, my gosh. There's a spectrum of, insane amount of different colors and flavors, really. Carrots can be very complex, high oil plants with lots of different flavors.
We were doing big words a little earlier, and one of those words has to do with the color purple. It starts with an A.
Oh, yeah, anthocyanins.
I wasn't even going to try it. Say it again.
You have your carotenes, beta-carotenes, anthocyanins.
Those are really specific to purple vegetables, correct?
Yep,
and very purple. Good for your health.
Absolutely.
Actually have some weird carrots at home right now that I got from Clint.
Oh, yeah.
No, he doesn't necessarily.
Yeah, he caters to both crowds.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And
I'll take the rejects.
Oh, yeah. So in the process of picking out our carrots, we'll be doing a purple carrot this year for seed. And it's mostly, it's bred by UW-Madison. It's another very diverse population, very vigorous, very exciting. So we usually grow out a big bed. At the initial selection, when I pull them out of the field, I pick only the best ones that go into a certain bag, and all the rest I eat for the winter.
And this is so fun because, he saves the carrot for the next year. Because it acts like a biennial, so that it seeds out the following season. We talked about this before.
I did a little biennial check. Right about now, I usually go through all my bags in the cooler, which is turned into a heater for the winter. And then it keeps all my roots above 34 degrees. And I have bags of cabbage stems, bags of carrots, bags of celeriac. What else is in there? Radishes, turnips. All these little guys that are waiting for 8 months, 6 to 8 months to come out and do their thing the second year.
And so you'll re-put them in the ground as the root vegetable that they are.
Yep.
And then wait for them to flower and seed and then gather. See, this just blows my mind.
The biennials are the more beautiful. It is really nice to see this thing you can hold all winter and then it blossoms the next year.
When people buy these little seed packs, they have no idea what has all gone into this. Yeah, like when you buy that pack of carrot seeds, folks, remember that. That is a previous year's plant.
And most gardeners don't know the processes maybe that go into it, but then you also don't know where it comes from. And what I've learned in the seed industry, it's a lot of shell game. There's a lot of wholesalers and middle people, and it could have traveled between two or three different people or companies across the world, and then finally made it to this wholesale company or, a packet company, and then it gets packaged there and then shipped to you. And then you don't know how old it is. It could be from a freezer or a fridge. They test everything, but seeds, like you said, they can hold a long time in the fridge, and they usually do that in the industry. So usually a lot of my stuff's pretty fresh and recent. It's all grown here for you to see. We have a second Saturday of July bloom tour. Folks are welcome to come out. Just pay attention to our Facebook or website for more info on that. But it's a good, we provide a very intimate interaction with your food. So folks are welcome to interact with that.
Yeah, and that bloom tour is really fun.
It's definitely,
remind me when it gets closer because we can put it on community calendar at the station and we'll put it on the plant rant calendar and get people encouraged to go out and see your farm and check it out because it's so intriguing to me. Just find it so interesting.
People can order seeds online though right now?
Correct. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Just visit our website, ctcseeds.com.
CTC, so Cultivating the Commons, ctcseeds.com for ordering. Mm-hmm. And now's the time. You can at least get them and then wait a little longer to plant them.
Then you're welcome to stop by the farm. People are welcome to pick up and say hi, and we're very encouraging that. So we have an open door policy. So
do you want to give that address?
You can visit the website. Yeah,
yeah, there we go. Oh.
I'm trying to think of other activities coming up. There's the green and traditional skills at Prairie Farm.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember which weekend that is this coming month.
Are you teaching a class there or attending?
I really want to. And unfortunately, I think the same weekend, that this is March 8th, is the Kelly Farm seed swap.
Okay.
Are you guys familiar with Kelly Farm?
No.
It's a historical, not reenactment, but a historical society farmstead on the north side of Minneapolis, just north of Minneapolis. It's near Anoka. And basically they have a big farm there, and they've been doing, I think, for 30 years now, a seed swap. And I've gone there since COVID, when we first moved here to Minnesota during COVID. We went to that, celebrated with a bunch of people, and then quickly locked down after that swap. And then, but we maintain a lot of connections, and we've gone there every year since that they've started reholding it. And it's big. Usually there's a few hundred or more people that show up, and it gets wild for about an hour. And there's a number, of individuals. I think there's 10 or 15 folks that were participating, but I'll try to see if I can also go to the green skills thing.
And real workshop. Quick, because we are out of time, yeah, but you do community ed at Unity. Is there any community ed classes coming up if people are interested in that? I know you just had one this week.
Oh, we haven't planned one quite yet. But
okay,
we just have
so
a little...
people can look for community ed through Unity. Clint does do regular teaching there. And oh my gosh, Debbie and Clint, thank you again. This was always so fun.
Absolutely.
And thank you, Baker Orchard, for being a proud sponsor of Plant Rant. Have a good month, everybody.